Blog Talk Radio.
This is DJ Sana Cody, me here, you there, Tainos everywhere. That's right, man, we are going to have a fun night. That's right, Apuchi, my family, mi familia. Espero que todo el mundo está escuchando Taino Radio, donde tú estás, en el Caribe. América, Turtle Island, la isla de la tortuga, cualquier sitio en el mundo que está, wherever you are, thank you for tuning in live or downloading this show. Please spread the news that the Taino Radio here in Blog Talk Radio is back. Also, we call it Indigenous Caribbean Radio. That's right. We are indigenous, and it's a good night to be indigenous. 10:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the East Coast, New York City, Lenape Territory. Man, we're expecting a big storm coming our way here in the East Coast from New York to Boston. Climate crisis has been having flowers growing in February, and now the frost is here. You got some icy snow, and some icy rain, and it's going to be some hazardous conditions. Little prayers go out to all the people back in the West Coast, not used to that snow and those floods. Many people have died throughout Turtle Island due to this extreme weather. And that's for another show, though, how this climate change or climate crisis, climate crash has affected our living throughout the world. Europe, they're losing all their rivers. You know, the rivers represent the veins of Mother Earth, and you don't want that to happen. You need those rivers. And in Europe, they're losing their rivers. They're losing the bloodline, the vines. That's not good. So it's very important to understand that we as an indigenous people anywhere in the world, especially you, listener, the indigenous Caribbean, that we are still here. We are still here. I have a special guest here that many of you might know from my previous shows. It's a very important person from Borinquen. And this person has brought some friends that want to discuss this whole identity. What is indigenous Caribbean? Does it mean to be, Taino? You know, the very word Taino has not been a very hot name in recent years. Because for many of us, we think that the word Taino either comes from Italy or it comes from the colonizer. But it's a word that's been used for a long time to represent. So I got a very, I have a special guest right here and friends, and they're going to explain what they think our name should be, especially from Borinquen. All right, man, take it away, straight out of Borinquen. What do you got to say about identity? Is it Taino? Is it Caribbean indigenous? What do you think? Wow, I totally agree. Why don't we just call ourselves Coqui, right? There you go. That's a good way. That's the sound. That's the heart of what it means to be indigenous, right? We got to listen to the tonas. We have to listen to our frog relatives. What do you think about that, Coqui? No, I totally agree. I think it's very important to keep that mindset, you know, that it's all about family. It's all about, you know, growing and producing the family lifestyle. And it doesn't matter what kind of family structure, you know, to be two-spirit, heterosexual, you know, it's all one. We're all family. What do you think about that, Coqui? Wow, that's truly profound, man. I totally agree, man. It has to be. You know, I heard, Coqui, that in California, you guys are in trouble. I hear in California, they're calling the cops on you because you're too noisy. That's right. People are calling 911 because of the Coquis. They have invaded parts of California. And what do you think about these people calling 911, the police, on Coqui, on you guys? Word, I think it's totally disgusting, man. They just don't understand. But, you know, not only you guys in Borinquen, now you guys are, for a long time, been in Hawaii, and now you're in California. You know, I hear rumors that you guys are hanging out with Boricuas out there in California. Just one last question. What's your secret of survival and growing? That's, oh man, I can't believe that's the secret. You know, we have to really understand the secret of the Coqui and how they survive. You can't take them out. And one more time, please share the secret to our listeners out there. Okay, thank you, Coqui. This song is dedicated to you guys. It's called, this is a master dance mix. It's called a Yunque. everyone. That's a little master mix there. It's called a Yunque dance mix. This is what happens when you get coquis together and you get the lizards and you get the snakes, you get the birds. They all want to hang out. They want to dance, man. That's what it's all about. And that's what Coqui was saying. It's about the dance. It's about the song. It's about the gathering. And that's my interpretation of what Coqui's saying. If anybody wants to tune in, wants to call in at 10:30, I'm going to open up the lines. And the phone number that you can call in, it's 515-605-9836. Let me write that again. I mean, not write it. Let me say it. 515-605-9836. Yeah, man, just tune in, and thank you all for listening right now. I don't know where you're at, but yeah, man, it's all good. Don't be shy. Every question, every comment, it's acceptable here in Taino Radio. So today I want to introduce a second topic, aside from Coqui's secret of healthy living. There's a cacique that I want to talk about. It's one of the first caciques I learned about in a Taino way when I first started studying. And this is Guaunabo, Cacique Guaunabo. And he was a cacique who died in 1496. And according to the Spanish historians, he caused a lot of trouble, so much trouble that they had to trick him to remove him from the island. And they took him and his relatives to Spain. They had to get rid of him. He was the rebel, according to them. But he wasn't a rebel, really. He was defending his people, his family, his children, his Yucayeque, the island, from these invaders. You know, so yeah, you can say he's a rebel, but he's really trying to. How about protector? How about that one? You know, he's a father, husband, uncle, brother, friend, you know. So what's the rebel? How about protector? And he tried his best against Christopher Columbus and his goon squad. So he died in 1496. He never got to Spain, though. His ship was it was a huge storm of lightning and thunder, what they call those storms in sea, and the ship sunk. So Cacique Guaunabo in 1496 entered Guave through the water, Bagua, right? And it's very unfortunate that his warrior ship was lost on that year in 1496. But his death gave life to the rebellion. It gave life to other protectors. And his ferocity as a leader, it just grew. And guess what? And this is what I want to talk about today, about the topic of the old ways meet the new ways, part one. And here's the thing. Cacique Guaunabo, he wasn't really born in the mainland. He wasn't born in Aitikiskea. He was born, actually, in the Bahamas. Those little small islands off the Bahamas. And it goes to show that there was a huge evolution that took place, in my understanding, from our creation stories where the people were separated between the Taino and other tribes in Casibahagua, Ranakauya. And what happened was, it seems like there was a huge evolution that took place in which other leaders or other people from different lands were accepted. So it just wasn't regional anymore, but it expanded. And I guess how I understand that is that, you know, I look at the North American tribes, I look at the South American tribes, Central American, and they still have a common belief that, you know, we judge a person by their heart. And when you understand their heart, you understand their spirit. So technically, you don't ask for DNA samples. You don't ask for blood results. What you do look for is, how is the person living their life? What is their desire to be part of a tribe, to be part of the community? And I believe that Kaunabo is that shift between regional Yukayekes to expanding far away from the island and accepting other people, other tribal people into their own. And that's the symbol of Kaunabo. So the old ways is to respect the office of cacique as the leader, right? And the respect of Naborias and the Nitainos, what they give to the cacique. It's a two-way street, right? It's a relationship. Both sides are earning their respect. But with Kaunabo, it's not regional anymore. It expands to the Lucayan people that were not native to Quisqueya, Haiti. They were native to the Bahamas. Oh, I'm getting a call. Hotline here. Hold on a second. Well, looks like I got a call from the FCC. They're saying, good job, Sana Cody. You're not cursing. All right. All right, man. So I want to introduce you to another cacique. And this cacique, his name is Guacanagarish. It's a long word. Guacanagarish. If you're taking notes, let me just backtrack a little. Kaunabo. C-A-O. N-A-B-O. And people, I always pronounce it Kaunabo. I put the accent on the last O. Some people say Kaunabo. Kauna, accent on the A. For some reason, I like Kaunabo. So it's C-A-O-N, accent on the A, or B-O, accent on the O. I don't know, I just like that sound, Kaunabo. It shows like strength, you know? And then the other cacique name, let me spell it out, G-U-A-C-A-N-A-G-A-R, accent on the I-X, Guacanagarish. Now, in Columbus's journal, he makes an appearance early on in that first trip. And the thing about Guacanagarish is that he showed a lot of compassion and love. When the Santa Maria went down the ship, he made sure that his warriors, himself included, they jumped into the ocean trying to save as much supplies as possible for the Santa Maria. And there's even stories that Guacanagarish cried. He wept when he empathized with Columbus when he lost his things. So it seems like, you know, loss of personal items was very important for our people, and that when people lost something, especially relatives, there was unity and there was empathy, which is a good thing, you know, it's a great thing. It's a value. It's a code of ethics, right? But let me just add something else about Guacanagarish, which is the negative aspect of this cacique. When Christopher Columbus, when he left 15 soldiers or 15 invaders behind, and they built a fort called La Navidad. And there they built a village. And what happened was Kaunabo was not very happy with these Spanish, with these invaders. And one of the things that he was not happy with was that they were raping women. Okay? And our ancestors had a tradition. Now, this could be a lie because it was the invader historical documents that stated this, that when a stranger will come to a village or when different leaders will come from other caciques, I mean, Yucayeques, they will be given as a gift, they will be given women for pleasure. And that's the invader perspective. So it seems like this tradition did take place with the 15 invaders, but There were a lot of rapes as well documented. So Kaonabo took the initiative to invade, to protect the women, to protect his people, and he destroyed La Navidad. Most likely there was a struggle that went on, a fight, and the 15 men were killed. So when Columbus came back looking for his men, Guacanagarish, and this is where a major paradigm shift occurred in Taino identity and culture. He told Columbus it was Kaonabo that killed the men. So instantly, this created a vengeful heart in Columbus, and he went searching for Kaonabo. Now, at this point, Kaonabo, once he was discovered as the one that killed the men and his warriors, vengeance was horrible. And this is where you hear read about the atrocities, what went on. And eventually, Kaonabo was captured. And it was kind of, according to some historians, Spanish historians, there was a kind of a lot of romanticizing stuff going on about his capture. But Bartolomé de las Casas, who was on the side of the natives, our ancestors, the Taino, he wrote that there was a man, I forgot his name, can't believe this. That's what happens with old age, right? You forget the names. Ojeda, who was a Spanish royal gangster goon, presented Kaonabo with some chains that were finely polished. And I could imagine with the sun, it was sparkle in the sun. So they said that Ojeda told Kaonabo that this is what the kings use to show their power. So according to the story, they closed the shackles on him. It was the wrists and the ankles, and that's how they catch a Kaonabo. It was a trick. See, they had to trick him. I'm a little biased on Bartolomé de las Casas version. Most likely that's what would occur. But maybe it's a little twisted, I don't know. But Kaonabo was captured that way. And that's when they sent him to Spain. They had to get rid of him because his rebellions were successful. So that's the first major strategic war strategy that Columbus implied. So let's take a step back here, okay? We got two historical figures, two caciques, Kaonabo, and then you got Guacanagarish. Guacanagarish showed through Columbus's journal the best of Taino culture, you know, empathy, service, unity, right? Especially with the stranger, hospitality. And then you got Kaonabo, who just did not like what was going down, disliked the violence of these 15 men, so much so that it ended in their deaths and also the destruction of La Natividad, which kind of dampers a little bit this myth that our ancestors were peaceful. You know, they were definitely very diplomatic. They used the batu game to settle disputes. But I can understand when your world turns upside down, there's a sense of desperation. And maybe that's what occurred there. Self-defense, right? Defending the women, the children. If you haven't read Bartolomé de las Casas' books, he has brief history books, accounts of what occurred, the atrocities. And there's one atrocity that I never forgot. I never will forget. One of the things when Columbus will come back from his journeys, he will always bring back swords in crates. And then the soldiers will go get the swords. And what they will do is they will line up villagers, our ancestors, and they will line them up from the elderly to the adults to the youth. And they had a contest how, you know, they'll take their new swords and they will have a contest of how many people they can slice in half, you know, with one swipe of the sword. And they will have these contests. And there was one child that got away from this onslaught. And he went to the church where Otama Agassas was living, and he begged for protection. And when the soldier came, he asked for the boy, and the Agassas was like, no, you can't have him. You know, the church protects him. And then the Spanish, whatever he said, he convinced the Agassas to give the boy back. And when he gave the boy back, he sliced his head right in front of the priest, sliced his head right there. And that's when the Agassas started writing letters to the Pope and the hierarchy saying, it's out of control. This island is out of control. And this was way after the priests stopped listening to confessions. That's how much it was out of control with the violence. So we got Guaca Na Garish, who turned on Gaunabo. So here's a major shift, in which a prominent cacique from the northwest of Quisqueya, at the time, traditionally was called Haiti, sided with a foreigner. So here's a major shift. One theory that he did this was because, here's the major shift politically. You know, he wanted to gain power. And we know that cacique has struggled with this concept of power. Who had the most semis, who had the most wives. So it seems like this cacique, Guaca Na Garish, had some motives. Maybe it was to protect his village from the violence. And he decided to side with Columbus because he saw what was going down. And he didn't want to be that rebel there of the overall island. So he had a positive side. He had a negative side in history. And then you have Cacique Caunabo, who was like, no, we're going to fight. We're going to protect. So we have two different caciques, two different identities. But it seems like there was a major shift there, where not only was Caunabo accepted as a cacique from the Bahamas and to their islands, and he married Anacaona, who was the sister of Bujiki, another cacique from Haiti. And now all of a sudden, he was, what we say in East New York and Brooklyn, he snitched on him. And that's also a controversial word. Sometimes I don't like using snitching. And I believe in social justice and justice. Criminals need to be, criminals need to pay. But I don't like the way the criminal system is right now, or was, still is. But, you know, our ancestors believed in order and there was justice. If you broke these code of ethics. So there's a major shift right here. Okay? So you got the ancient ways where you separate the people Makokae got punished for it. And then you have this shift that Kaunabo from a different island was accepted as one of the five major caciques. And then you have Guaca Na Garish, who represented the old ways as well, and showing respect to the foreigner, showing hospitality. And then, boom, a paradigm shift occurred. Okay. Now, part two, I'm going to talk about the different wars and the different players that took place right after Caunabo died in the sea. A lot of wars occurred. And then in Borinquen as well, you know, these caciques, they had relatives in all the islands. So it's very important to understand that Taino identity or indigenous Caribbean identity in 1492 and so on took a major paradigm shift. And right now, 538 years, we're still struggling with this identity. And you see it many times even now, this whole power struggle, you know, and it's not easy. I guess it never was easy. And this is where I want to open up the lines to discuss, you know, what your opinion is about this historical context of these caciques, Caonabó and Guacanacarish. So I'm going to open up the lines. Once again, it's 515-605-9836. And this is how this works. You call in, and then I'll connect you on air live. So just to give people time for that, 515-605-9836. I'm going to see if I could play some, play a nice song for you guys. Let's see. Let me go in the archives. I got some cool songs. What do you think, man? Oh, man, I got too many songs. I don't know which one to pick. But wait a minute. Hold on a second. This is embarrassing. How about? This is a 3-minute master mix that I made. It's called The River Life. Living by the river, inspired by our ancestors. On the evolution of Taino identity after 1492, and using two examples of two caciques, both express in the history books the positive of what it is to be Taino or Caribbean indigenous, and then the one character there in Guacanacarish express loyalty to a foreigner. So in one way, the Taino culture took a huge paradigm shift in accepting a cacique in Caonabó from another island far away in the Bahamas, okay, from the Lucayan people, which is relatives of Taino culture, but in a small scale. And then the acceptance of the foreigner in Christopher Columbus, a.k.a. the invader. Okay, 570. I want to connect you in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1, 0.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hey, who's this?
This is Bana.
Bana, wait a minute. Can you tell our audience, who are you?
Hello, I'm Bana. I'm from Pocono Mountains. I'm on Lenape territory. And I'm part of Arieke Yukayek. And I'm here to discuss what we've been talking about for today's show.
Okay, someone wants to say hello. It's a whole bunch of them.
I love it.
Well, Bana, thanks for coming in. Is there any words of wisdom or thoughts and from the heart you want to share?
Yes. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, talking about, you know, the old ways turning into the new ways and how our ancestors went through back with the contact of Christopher Columbus and just
thank you
learning just about, you know, the positive and the negative aspects of it. And from like a neutral standpoint, like I understand why our ancestors did what they did. From our ancestors of, you know, sticking together as a community and helping each other out and surviving. But then I also understand the negative aspects of those that took the initiative to side with the foreigner. If you look at it from like a survival standpoint, you know, people are going to decide what's best for them when it comes to just being for them. And then I can understand it as a community standpoint where we stick together as a community. And with our ancestors, you know, community was extremely important. Sticking together and, you know, keeping our morals or ethics the way that it needed to be. But with the contact of Christopher Columbus, a lot of that changed, and it was like a shift. And from my personal opinion, if I was ever in that situation, there was different things that needed to be done in order to survive. So hearing the story, I don't condone certain individuals like the two caciques that you spoke about making those decisions. But that's from like a neutral standpoint. But I do understand of the decisions that we make are quests to our decisions. So thank you for sharing your wisdom. And that's just something that I just wanted to, you know, talk about from what I got.
Oh, man. Thank you, man. It's just stuff that I researched, you know, 20 years ago. And I'm obsessed with these two figures because they're so opposite, but yet they're the same. It's weird, you know, in their own way.
Right.
But you're right. It's very difficult. You know, and sometimes I think, like, for example, I remember many years ago when my daughter was, like, 16. I remember we were walking in a kind of a difficult neighborhood. A lot of people drinking and stuff and getting high. So I told her, hey, stay close to me, you know, and walk towards the street side, you know. And whatever happens, you know, just be cool because it was a lot of activity. It was a summer night. And lo and behold, it was someone that started acting fresh towards her, you know. And I got really upset. I kind of blacked out. And I confronted this person, and I said, what did you say? And then the person, called her a sexual whatever, you know, term. And he repeated it again, and he added more words. And, you know, I felt the rage in me, and I said, you know what? This is going to be the last day of his life. That's how I was thinking, you know? And I said, it's going to go down. And then I heard my daughter's voice saying, Daddy! You know, she yelled it. I guess she saw my rage. And that kind of woke me up, you know? And then I looked at the man and says, you know what? Am I willing to go to jail the rest of my life for this guy? Or at least 20 years, you know? And then I walked away. And the wisdom of Anani, my daughter, you know what she told me? She said, Daddy, why did we walk on this block? You taught me never do this, you know, to avoid the shady neighborhoods. I'm like, damn, you're right. So, I don't know, I was thinking of that. Like, I could have been like Aunabo, right? Like, let's just kill these guys, you know?
That's their punishment.
We'll just kill them.
But then he probably didn't think about when Columbus comes back, right? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
But so sometimes we have to be careful with anger, I guess, right? But we can't judge. We can't judge these people. Get these figures. Uh-huh.
No, I definitely agree.
Wow. And that's one of the lessons of when you learn history is that you can't use your moral values on a historical person from the past, you know? But then I often struggle with that, too, because it's like, damn, but look at Columbus, you know? He was a murderer, you know? Like, that's not right. We weren't like that. But, I don't know, it's difficult. It's difficult, right?
No, it definitely is. Because, like, from my personal morals, like, I always believe in making things right and, you know, having justice being served. Mm-hmm. So just like looking back to like, you know, this historical text, you know, just from mm-hmm. like an outsider looking in, like, you know, I can understand why they did what they did, like with mm-hmm. our ancestors, the decisions that they made. Mm-hmm. And then there's other aspects where I'm just like, why did you make that decision?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it could have been different. But then I also think that, you know, it's like a lot of things that happen in our life, sometimes it has to happen at that moment the way that it has to be because it was
right.
meant to happen at that time. You know, there's always free will to change things.
Right.
But just looking back at him, just like, okay, I understand it, but then I can also understand that it had to happen that way. But now we can make that change. We could take what we have learned from our ancestors, but it's really up to us to make that change in our community and also amongst ourselves and those that we,
right.
you know, invite into our lives.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah, you know, in the next show, we're going to talk about the famous cacique, Eniquillo, because he did some stuff, too, that he did both sides, you know, the peaceful side and the warrior, the war style. But keep that in mind for next time, all right? But you bring up
yes.
some great dynamics. And, you know, it's easy to say, to judge these actions, right, as good and evil, right, or good and bad, but positive, negative energies, right?
Mm-hmm. And another mm-hmm. thing, too, our ancestors, they were human, like us.
that's it.
Being in the physical world, you know, we're going to have our human decisions that we're going to have to make to deal with whatever obstacles come into our vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we also have to understand our ancestors were human, so.
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was doing research for today, I found there was a book that was published in 2014, Viala, and the book is called The Post-Columbus Syndrome Identities. It's cultural nationalism and you know, yeah, basically cultural nationalism and commemorations in the Caribbean. And check this out. In the book, it mentions how in the modern Dominican Republic, there's a term they use. I'll say it in English first. Guacanacarish complex. El complejo de Guacanacarish. So basically, when someone, when a Dominican considers themselves or focuses more on foreign cultures than their own country, their own cultural norms in their country, that's what they say. They have a complex, the complex of Guacanacarish. You know, you're more interested in foreign culture than our culture. So it's interesting that cultural continuity exist to this day, man, in Dominican Republic, and they echoed this cacique Huaca na Carish complex. Interesting, right? So okay, let's get our next caller in there, and don't go anywhere, Bada. It's a 347 caller. 3, 2, 1, 0. Who are you?
Hello, this is Jamyang. What's up, everybody?
Hey, what's up?
Hello.
I'm here. This is Mohegan Lenape territory, and I'm a Taino in Connecticut.
You're the last of the Tainos in Connecticut?
No, you know what? There are quite a few Dominican population here. So that was joyous. But I think the Puerto Rican population here is in Hartford, if I'm not mistaken, Waterbury, a little bit far up.
Yeah.
My grandmother's cousin, Leo, lived in Hartford since the 50s. A lot of Puerto Ricans in Hartford for decades, almost a century, 80 years.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's good history there. Well, we have someone who wants to say hello. He's one of the friends here in Taino Radio. I don't know about you, but whenever I play that, they sound different, right? They come to life. So
you know,
I have
a bone to pick. First of all,
why?
Who dared to call 911 on those cookies? What kind of like evil Karen? How dare you? Cookie were here before humans. Did you see them say go back to the water?
You know, I should quote the source, but that lady Bianca, she's on TikTok and YouTube. She's the reporter.
Yes,
what's her last name? Right? You know what I'm talking about,
she's
right?
Famous. I know her,
Bianca, yeah, she's the one that broke that story. How they call 911.
How dare people? The Koki are native to Earth, and they're reptilian. They were there for millions of years. It's very terrible that anybody would call the police on them. First of all, they don't like the police. Okay, they don't like interference. Why are these people minding their own business? They just mind their business, you know?
Yeah. Oh. Let me see. I just don't get that, right? Like, why call the police on these poor innocent frogs?
I know. That doesn't make any sense to me. That's like somebody wants to call the police for nothing because the police are going to do some documentation and write stuff, and that's okay, but, like, these cookies are illiterate, and they're innocent. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. They need a public defender.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Because it's inhumane. It's inhumane. It's harassment. Nature has a spirit, you know? Our ancestors knew nature had a spirit. You can't just harass beings.
Yeah, I just read an article. I'm just thinking on an article. It's saying, California, watch out. The invasive coqui frog is coming.
You see how racist that is? That's
right?
Racist. Yeah, it is. What do you mean invasive? What about the colonizers? Colonizers are invading. I don't see them talking about that. They need to flip the script, turn the story around, take a good look in the mirror before they point at anybody invading. I'm over
it. They said it was first spotted in 2012, Orange County. It probably hitchhiked on a tropical houseplant.
Not even. so many people love them that they just want to bring them everywhere.
Yeah, but the thing is, it has to be in a Boricua neighborhood because they can't live without
Boricuas,
right? Of course.
They came with the family. They probably drove out there from the East Coast.
Wow. Look at this. The nocturnal call of a male coqui can reach noise levels up to 80 to 90 decibels.
Oh, my God. What is that, like a pin drop? I'm so over people.
It says the equivalent of a running lawnmower.
Look, no, that's a lie. We all have heard coqui. That's like, look, beep, boop, boop, beep, 911, what's your emergency? Excuse me. There's a little coqui outside. Ma'am, what street do you live on? We're sending out people right now. We'll be there in 10 minutes. Okay, I can't help it. It's too many Puerto Ricans over here.
That's it, man. It's all connected, right? Yo, there's even a hotline you can call in. Damn.
1-800-COQUI.
Exactly, man. Exactly.
Yeah, listen, 1-800-COQUI.
See, they sound upset.
Oh, after this level of injustice, they don't have a choice. They need now people to rise up and protect, the spirit protector.
I don't know, man. Let's get some Taino Radio volunteers. We're going to go to California, and we're going to protect the coqui. I'm telling you, man, they need it.
You know what? One time when I was in Los Angeles, I was grocery shopping because I was buying some food. I was like, you have culantro over here? They looked at me like, what are you talking about? Is that, that's a fictional vegetable. We're like, cilantro. These were Chicanos. They were like, yo, cilantro. I said, culantro? And they were like, sis. I was like, we can't do this. We're not on the same page. We're not the same page.
Word, man. That's crazy, man. But let's see if... So do you have any thoughts on what we discussed today about these caciques?
Well, seeing two caciques, seeing them betray each other, I want to say Cacique Caonabo, you know, he seemed to have righteousness, justice, leadership in mind, and ultimately... Seeing how the women were treated, having compassion, but yet compassion is important. That's a good thing. But it's like if it gets betrayed, then that's probably a harder balance to have in intertribal politics. Guacanagarish, he betrayed. I don't know. If he betrayed, I feel like the system of being betrayed, our ancestors must have known that. Stab in the back, they would have known it. Because how can it be that one time in history they got betrayed? They probably knew, like, if it's the first cousin, the second cousin, and he had his eye on trying to be a casita too, it's like betrayals happen. And to betray somebody for the Spaniards to have more, I guess, more authority and more, to have more of an in, that's so disgusting. It's just sad to me that our people were fragmented, actually.
Okay. Yeah, it's not easy, man. So you see him as a traitor then, huh?
Well, betraying one cacique for the other, I mean...
Guacanacarish.
Guacanacarish. It doesn't sit right with me that he betrayed Caonabo. It doesn't... You know, I don't feel right about it. Like, I can't be like, okay, that was the correct thing to do. At the same time, having separate and fractured Taino forces and tribes only makes it easier for colonization to be a complete annihilation. You know?
Exactly, right?
That was like a bad political plan. And being friends with the Spaniards didn't help nothing. 500 years later, people don't even know the language of our ancestors. It's waste. Thankfully, we got to just take it back.
Well, the thing that's sad is Guacanacarish was, you know, I praise him because he's the one that showed hospitality to Columbus, and he showed the European world what we were about, because it was December 25th that occurred when he helped Columbus, and it showed the generosity, and Columbus even wrote that, wow, these people are so generous, they're so kind. And it was this cacique, and then, wow, look what happened. So it's just wow. What do you think, Bana? This is the guy who pretty much put us on the map, literally. He was the first one that represented us. Waka?
If anything, that basically put the historical precedent for all of our activities, because if we didn't do that, then who knows, we could have been wiped out of history later.
Mm-hmm.
I think
that's
that
true.
Act of trying to put us on the map, so even when they try to destroy us, we still know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Bana? Should we...
I'd actually, like, agree with that. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me.
I think it's, I don't know, if there's one point that I learned, the old ways and the new ways, right now we're still struggling with that clash, right? Like for example, is it proper, should it be like the way that when we dress in, that, you know, we need to dress it a certain way in regalia, you know, is there a certain way to do it, like a uniform way to doing it? You know, we still, you know, the identity issue, you know, how we look, how we, you know, literally how we look, our face, our hair, our clothing, you know, this still it's an identity issue here, right? What do you guys think about that?
I would say yes. From what you just said, I definitely see that amongst other individuals. And I also just see that as, like, a sort of, like, power and, like, control, like, having to control other people to look a certain way and have to represent a certain way because that's their expectation. And I personally do not agree with that. I feel like everybody's entitled to stand in their truth, but we all should come together as a community even though we have our differences. So from that aspect, I definitely do not agree with that. And I feel like that's just something that we all need to start working together instead of fighting each other from what we should be looking as or how we should do certain things. I personally don't agree with that.
That's
a little tricky for me because Puerto Ricans, since the first time when we came from the Oaxaca Valley, there were people from the Yucatan and people from Florida mixing with all of our bloodlines, and that's from history. And different migration paths of people from South America also had different features and evolutions. And yet, in modern times, so many Puerto Ricans have part European, part African, as well as part indigenous bloodlines, as a majority of Puerto Ricans have some mixture of these two, if not more, because of immigration and other races and stuff. So I think it's very hard to have a uniformity. My own family, I have people who are black, who are white, and who are Indian, and that's just how it is. The uniformity of look is very tricky. Even in my own sisters, we all look so different.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I like to give some insight, and I like to hear some of your perspective on this. But, you know, back in the day, I say in the mid-90s, when people started getting together and forming groups, Taino groups. This is before the Yucayeques. And, you know, this is before social media, too. It was like always we always went to the powwows because that was like a place we could meet other Tainos, you know, to the powwows. And one thing, once you met Tainos, you would get together socially afterwards, you know, or, you know, make dates like, hey, man, let's get together, this and that. And this is before DNA came out and all that other stuff. And we were like, the way we judge one another was how much we can gift one another, you know. So I remember we were just so happy to see other Taínos, you know. Like, oh, shit, you're Taíno? Oh, yeah, me too, man. And we were always, like, not desperate, but we were always enthused to gift. And it came naturally, you know. Like, so someone said, yo, man, I like your necklace. Wow, man, I haven't seen some. Hey, man, thank you, man. Hey, you want it? You want it? And then you give it, you know. And then maybe that person will give you a wristband or something, you know, or shirt, you know, that said, you know, kiss me, I'm Taíno. I'm just kidding about that. But it's, it was like innocent, you know, it was natural, I should say. So now it got really intense, you know, you got to show your DNA, you got to show your photos, you got to show some documentation, genealogy, you know.
That's so fascist. Show me your papers. Oh, that's too fascist for me.
That's very having a colonizer mindset.
Exactly.
The colonizers did that to us, and we're doing
exactly
that to each other. That makes no sense to me.
It's literally different.
Well, it's like the old ways. Well, let's go back in the time machine. How would Taínos recognize one another back in the days? You know, say you got lost in a yunque and ended up somewhere else. Say you ended up in Arecibo, right? From a yunque to Arecibo, that's a long walk. But so how would you recognize, you know, how would they judge you as either as indigenous? You know what I mean? How would they do that? I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud now. In the old ways. So we got to go in time, you know. Anybody?
It's possible through the facial markings of the paint or the different accoutrements, the different articles they had on their person. I know
right.
They didn't really have too much clothing on. And mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe the Nahuatl was plain, but if like maybe the they had could have contained markings like West tribe. They have straight lines. East tribe, same color line, slightly wavy. I don't know, but you know, there's different ways to markate a little differentiation. Even the Lenape,
right.
Where I live is Lenape, but it's a slightly different Lenape than it is in New Jersey. So New Jersey has Lenape, so does Connecticut, but they have it's like a different tribe, so or different section of the tribe. So I think they might do that, perhaps.
Okay. So it's always, how are you? So you're saying the markings, clothing too, right? Huh?
Like different face paint?
Face paint, yeah, okay. How about you, Bana? You have any ideas? The old ways.
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay. How about now, like the new ways? Like how do we see someone? How do we make a decision? Oh, that's a Taíno.
Well, nowadays you can't say that's a Taíno by just looking at our appearances. We're all mixed. We all look different.
You know, Bana, but there's a phenotype for Puerto Rican. Phenotype
that's
means
true.
A certain group of features. I could always tell a Puerto Rican a mile away. It doesn't matter if they're African, if they're Chinese, if they're European. I could just tell. To me, it looks like they have a beautiful kind of complexion. No matter what color is their complexion. I can always tell Puerto Rican. I'm like, my people. Oh, yay.
Yeah, because we're all related. Yeah, because we're all cousins. We're all cousins. That's why.
You know what? Maybe when we see each other, we just do like, and then.
Yeah, that's it. That's how we know.
Now, well, I don't know if you guys ever been to Puerto Rico, but what I remember as a child going for the first time, I never forgot this. When the plane finally landed, everyone started cheering, like I'm home, man. You know, everybody started cheering like crazy, like. And then when you leave, you cry. It's like, so you're happy as wherever, and then you start to cry when you leave. It's like, wow, man, that's deep. It's a connection, you know, and I see that in Dominican, you know, Dominicans, you know, my experience in hospice care, they desperately try to get the person back home to die in the island, or the dying person will try their best to get back home, you know, or before they get really sick, they start making plans because they want to die in the island. You know, they want to die by home. Or if they don't make it, their last wish is to be either cremated or buried back home. That's that indigenous way, right? So that's kind of a new way of looking at it, right? How a person views the island, right?
Mm-hmm.
Damn,
that's very beautiful, but I also feel like with the cave markings that our ancestors made, their home was the cosmos, and they knew that. They knew it. I think our ancestors were too deep. I have not heard so much that Puerto Ricans were like that. But, I mean, I feel like our ancestors just used their mind to be psychic, to go to the next level, and to try to understand the whole galaxy. Because those kind of images that they carved into the stone, some of them look very galactic.
Wow. Yeah, it's just there's definitely new ways of looking at, you know, well, here's something I learned back in the day too, is when we used to go to the powwows, we were always insecure of dancing in the powwows, because a lot of people didn't accept us because we were so new, you know, we were like appropriating. A lot of people thought we were appropriating the culture, the native culture, right? And then little by little, you know, we got the courage to dance. And I remember one day when I went to Crow Nation powwow, it's called Crow Fair. And it's like 5,000 dancers, you know. And I remember going early and trying to get the spirit, like, I can do this. So I waited till hundreds of dancers were going by, you know. And finally, a guy came up to me and says, "Yo, why are you not in there? What's going on?" I was like, "I don't know, man. I'm kind of nervous." "Like, what are you nervous about?" "Nervous of being rejected." He's like, "What?" So he grabs me, he takes me to the line, right? And then there's a dance arena who checks off who goes in the dance arena, and I got really scared. I said, "This is going to be the guy that's going to tell me to go home, right?" and then the dancer was like, "Yo, bro, he's a Taino. He wants to dance." And the guy looks at me like, "Why are you asking me for?" You know, like, he was like, "What are you asking me?" He's pissed off. He was really pissed off. Like, "Why are you asking me? Just get in there, man." And it was like, whoa, man. It was like the first time in my life. Like, man, no one's judging me. You know, we're our worst critic, right?
Yeah.
And it was amazing dancing with the crow. Was that?
Oh, see Taino dance, and to like have more of that in our culture, because I feel like we really need it.
No, definitely, man, definitely. And you know, I'm a fancy dancer, and I often, one of my complejos or complexes is people not going to recognize me as Taino. Far from it, everyone recognizes me. They always come up to me, "You Taino?" I'm like, "Damn, what's up?" I'm dressing like a native.
Perfect.
You know.
Perfect.
But it goes to your theory. We know each other.
Mm-hmm. I think we see with the third eye.
Yeah,
we know each other. You know, we know each other. So, wow, this is a good... Oh, listen, I found the clip. I'm going to play it, all right? Hold on a second, guys. Her name is Bianca Graulau. Graulau? Did I see you pronounce her last name?
Right. Yes, that's her.
Graulau. Okay, hold on. This is too funny. I got to play it.
Discussion about turning this back into a luxury hotel will eliminate poverty in the surrounding community.
Yes.
But the argument is that it'll bring jobs.
Okay, hold on.
There are two things I want to say about that. No, I don't know if you knew this, but Puerto Ricans have an emotional attachment to the sound of this frog. I know it sounds weird, but listen. It's beautiful, and we're not going to argue about this. Especially if you're Puerto Rican and you've had to leave. It just sounds like home, and we love it. But in California, they disagreed. And ever since...
Wait, guys. Hold on, guys. I put the wrong sound on it. Hold on.
As you knew this, but Puerto Ricans have an emotional attachment to the sound of this frog. I know it sounds weird, but listen. It's beautiful, and we're not going to argue about this, especially if you're Puerto Rican and you've had to leave. It just sounds like home, and we love it. But in California, they disagreed, and ever since I saw the story in the actual news, I cannot stop thinking about it. They were like, Gokis invading Southern California, and in Beverly Hills, they called the cops.
Police showed up to try to get the homeowner to turn off this broken alarm, but the broken alarm was, in fact, just a male coqui frog looking for a female.
In that story, they also said that home prices in Hawaii went down because of the sound of the coqui, and they call the sound shrill. I don't know if you knew this, but Puerto Ricans have an emotional attack.
They call it shrill.
They're wrong. Oh, my God. Oh, goodness.
Yo, but,
they
you know.
They don't throw them as cool as ours.
Our struggle is their struggle, right?
Did I tell you that the coqui is our totem, Behike? 100%.
Oh, it's all over the art, right?
It's our totem. I feel like Puerto Ricans don't know. But, like, I have a whole theory, which I was thinking about for, like, it took me a year to think about it. But a lot of times when you see the coqui in the pictures and in different representations, it's the outline of the coqui or the silhouette of the coqui. And I will tell you, they put the silhouette of the coqui because, especially if you're living on the island or you're there and it's dark, you hear the coqui, you don't see the coqui. Therefore, our ancestors knew that there was an unseen world. We have partial senses to the next world. We can hear a coqui, we don't see it. Our ancestors were wise. And the silhouette of the coqui is the most transcendental and profound totem because it says, I hear something. I see nothing. That's the reality of the coqui. One foot in the next world, one foot in this world. So perfect. Our ancestors were the best.
Yeah, they were, man. They were. And any final words before we lock up? Yeah. Mano, you have any final words?
This was great.
That's cool. That's cool. Thank you. Yeah, it's great if you guys came on, you know.
Of course.
So, you know, there's old ways meaning the new ways and new ways meaning the old ways. It's always going to be a struggle, I guess, for a while, this Taino identity, you know. Now we deal with intergenerational trauma. We carry the pain of our ancestors, right? And, yeah, man, it's sad. Well, I like to end the show with one final song, Taka Naboria Mayani Makana. It's Jose Luis Guerra. I always play his song. I love this guy. This guy's the best. Itai, if you're listening to me right now, Itai is a Taino from Borinquen and Sidra. He's the one that introduced me to this song. And we just heard it like for hours, man. It's basically in 1992. You guys know about him, Jose Luis Guerra?
No.
He's a Dominican singer. Well, you know, in 1992, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, they were celebrating 500 years of the discovery of the Americas, Christopher Columbus, right? So in 92, he wrote a couple of songs, and this song, it was in his album that year that came out, dedicated to the ancestors. And it's a beautiful song. If you guys want to hear it now, it's a beautiful song. It talks about basically, I am a human. I am a person. I am a person of the mountain. My spirit is in the mountains. Please do not kill me. And he got a lot of heat for this song in 92 because they're having fun, right? Columbus, yeah. And he comes out with this song. It's like people are like, what the hell? So I consider him like Jose Luis Guerra, like one of the leaders of the rebellion through music. You know what I mean? Because right after that, Taino people started unifying. So I'll end the song. It's a 2-minute song. It's really quick, but it's really powerful. Okay, everyone, thanks for tuning in. All you listeners out there who are live or downloading the show, this is DJ Sana Cody. Take it away, Jose Luis Guerra.
canal. Never